Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing.
I am feeling happy today. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Mike Resnick, who is one of my favorite authors. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Patsy. How you doing?
Okay, great. Well, I am so happy to have you back again. You know, I often think about you. Well, I think about you almost every day, actually, because there I have your books right next to me. You know, it is always so much fun to talk to you. I have so many listeners who are writing sci-fi, and they always ask me, well, you know, who should I read? And of course, I say Mike Resnick, because this is, you are so amazing. I know that
you're to be commended.
You have, of course, you know, you won 5 Hugo Awards and I think nominated for 37. You've just about cleared every other award in the business. It's just so wonderful, the work that you've done. And wow, what are you up to now?
Well, right now, I've just delivered the first book of a fantasy trilogy to Daw Books, and I owe them 2 more. And I'm collaborating with a couple of different women, with Mercedes Lackey, who your readers probably know. She's quite a bestseller. She and I are collaborating on a horse racing fantasy called Win, Place, and Fly. And I'm also collaborating with Jody Lynn Nye, and she and I are doing one called Ophir, which is based on special knowledge I have on Africa. If you will grant just one fact, that King Solomon's mines existed at one point, I know where they are and why nobody's ever found them. And we decided to write a book about it. So that's what I'm doing. I'm in the middle of 4 books right now.
Wow. So you are always busy. You've already written, I think, over 70, right?
And oh, in science fiction, I think I am closing in on 80. I've done some mysteries. I've done some nonfictions, but science fiction's my métier.
And, of course, how many short stories now?
Just short of 300. I think I'm 286, something like that.
Wow. And, of course, you do like to collaborate with other authors.
Yeah, I do. It's a way of bonding with friends who I probably won't see for years at a time. I've collaborated with people in France and Australia, all over. And also, I collaborate with what has become known as Mike's writer children. Whenever I find a talented newcomer, it's not the friendliest field in the world, a newcomer. So I buy from them for my magazines or my anthologies. I collaborate with them to get them in print. And at conventions, I take them around, introduce them to editors and agents. Somebody saw 4 or 5 of them following me around like chickens following a mother hen. And that's when the term Mike's writer children arose.
Well, I know. I've talked to some of them over the years, and they are all of the young authors are so grateful for your support, because it, as you said, it is not easy to break into the business. It's a difficult thing, and it means so much when they get their first story published. It really changes their life.
Yes, it does. And the flip side is that I can't thank the people who helped me. I'm 76 in 2 more days. Yeah. Everybody who helped me is rich or dead or both. So the only way I can pay the field back is to help the next generation.
Well, I think it is marvelous. And as a matter of fact, I knew it was your birthday because I have a special song for you.
Oh?
Oh, yeah, I do. And because, well, I just love you. And so when I knew it was your birthday, I said, I have to have Mike on, and I have a song for you. So just listen here.
Happy birthday to you, and may all your dreams come true.
Party night, could feel the vibration.
Okay. How do you like that?
I'm flattered beyond belief.
Well, I thought you would like that. I thought it has a nice beat. It's called DJ Bobo, and I love the beat, and I thought it would relate very well to you because,
also,
of course...
I'm very surprised. You know, my birthday's not quite a national holiday yet.
Well, I would never forget it, and so I wanted to play this song for you. You know, it has a nice African beat, and I thought, well, you know, it's appropriate for you because, of course, you love Africa.
Yeah, I've probably done more writing about Africa than any other science fiction writer, at the very least.
Talk about some of the books that are centered around Africa.
Well, I have one called Kirinyaga that is my most awarded book, I think, worldwide. It's got something like 63, 64 awards and nominations. It just won a huge award in China as what's it called? The Galaxy Award. Their Hugo. And it was from a suggestion by Orson Scott Card. He was putting together an anthology of utopian colonies on terraformed planets. And basically, it had to be told by an insider who believed in this particular utopia. And he was talking about all kinds of utopias that he had assigned, a communist one, a thinking dolphin one, whatever. And I thought I would like to do one for East Africa. And one of the catch-22s was it had to be told by somebody who believed in it, not just a tourist who says, this is what I saw. And I thought it'd be an interesting story to find the most heinous custom I could and have my narrator defend it. And among the Kikuyu people of East Africa, at the time at least, it was considered any baby born feet first was a demon, had to be put to death instantly. And I had the leader of that colony, who was trying to establish a Kikuyu utopia, free of all Western influence, do that, and then have to defend it against the people who ran the colony. And a number of stories sprang from that, and as I say, that was one that won. I have a Hugo and Nebula nominee called Ivory. I saw a photo of the largest trophy ever taken, or it wasn't even taken, ever found, the tusks of an animal called the Kilimanjaro elephant. They're about 11, 12 feet long, 230 pounds each. No elephant in history, except for that, has ever had tusks weighing as much as 200 apiece. And I got permission from the British Museum to go see them. They're not on public display because they think the elephant may have been poached, that he was not shot on license, which is ridiculous because back in 1898 they weren't giving out licenses. But anyway, they're not on display. I saw them. And I talked to my agent, and I said, you know, I think I could do a really interesting book following the tusks from when the elephant was killed or died in 1898 until the British Museum got their hands on them 40 years later, because I gather the tusks were originally sold at auction, and a number of the people who owned it ran into all kinds of serious problems. One got murdered, one got robbed, whatever. And she said, yeah, well, you know, we might be able to make a couple of $1,000s with that, but if you would remember that you're a science fiction writer and follow them for the next 6,000 years, we got a bestseller here. So I listened to my agent, and sure enough, we did.
That's wonderful.
And I've done an awful lot of stories about Africa. You don't want me to describe each of them.
No, but it is wonderful that you have written these stories. And, of course, Kirinyaga is a beautifully told story and rightly so very, very popular. When you look back, I mean, this is an amazing career of writing all of these books, and you are still so active. And one of the things I always tell authors that you have to be out there selling yourself, because you cannot sit back sort of on your laurels. You have to be out there always promoting yourself. And you have so many fans in the sci-fi community, and I know that over the years you did so many conferences. But that is one of the things that a writer has to do, right?
Yeah, you have to be available. In fact, you have to make yourself available for anybody who wants to talk. I have been a guest of at I think something like 55 conventions. That's a lot of very nice all expense paid vacations, but once I'm there I got to work like hell, give speeches, sign autographs, talk to beginners, whatever. And you've got to keep your name in front of the public, and you got to keep doing it by writing new stuff. It'd be nice if you could write one classic when you were 23 and live on it for 50 years, but very few of us can. For example, last year, I'm an old guy. I really am. I'm 75. And in 2017, I had out 6 books. This is what I do. I found out years ago, 50 years ago, that nobody phones or knocks on the door between 10 at night and 6 in the morning. And for more than half a century, that's been my work day. And I think I get a lot extra done by making sure nobody's going to interrupt or bother me during the time I write. As a matter of fact, I'm up early talking to you.
Why?
Ordinarily, I'd sleep till about 3 o'clock.
That's what...
But for you, I would get up any old time.
Okay. Well, I'm glad because I think it's always so remarkable that authors really, of course, you have to love what you're doing, and it is a wonderful profession because you can keep doing it. As you know, Mary Higgins Clark is 89 years old, and she's still writing, and her books are as fresh today. Her last book, I thought, was as good as anything that she's ever written, and that's the wonderful thing about being a professional writer, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing to stop you from continuing to produce, and in fact, the longer you've been doing it, theoretically, the better you become at it. It's a very satisfying thing. You see your name in print, you please and hopefully influence readers and writers, and
it's fun. It's fun.
A lot of fun.
It makes your life.
It's a real kick when you read a story you've written and it came out pretty much the way you hoped it would when you sat down to write it.
And to know that your books are translated into so many languages, and there are people in all sorts of countries, out over there in Finland, they're reading you, in China.
Yeah, my wife and I, we get invited all over because of that. We were just in Barcelona, a lovely city, and I'm there. I only know one person in Barcelona through correspondence, but a bunch of them got together and comped our trip and showed us the town, and we had a great time. I can't tell you how many countries we've been to just because I'm a writer and people in those countries like what I wrote.
And it just makes your life so full. And I've always sort of felt sorry for J.D. Salinger and Harper Lee. I know, you know, they had great books, and then they locked themselves away from the world.
Well, Salinger hid. I guess Harper Lee did too, but yeah. Salinger was famous for hiding.
Oh, they hid.
Kind of contradictory.
Yeah, they hid, and there's so much joy that they could have bring to readers, because one of the things that we need to do is to encourage people to read more. I think that when authors get out there and meet the public and do these events, it just helps for readers to feel, whoa, I have a connection to reading. It will open my mind. And I so admire all of the authors who get out there and intermingle with the public.
Absolutely. Most of my friends in the field do much the same thing. We all have the same basic attitude, which is, you know, mingle with the public, tell them what we're doing, get them interested. Maybe some of them will want to write too. You never know. We're having a great time. Let's share it.
Okay, everybody. Bye-bye.